Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you get any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnis Training proudly present No Borders, No Links, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King Baby Doc Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. So, if you've been reading my more recent gaming and anime reviews, you'll notice that there's a new feature that appears at the end of our articles. That section is called Background Noise, which gives you a bit of an insight on how I actually compose my articles. You see, what I tend to do is find a record that shares the tone of the game or anime that I'm writing about, and then play it as I compose my piece. And I usually do my best to finish the article before the album is finished, so it's like giving my brain a deadline of sorts. In the past, you may have seen me pair up Persona 5 with Roger Waters' latest album, Is This the Life We Really Want?, as both the record and game deal with certain political climates and viewpoints of today's society. The anime Hinako Note I put together with a recent release from The New Pornographers, Whiteout Conditions, as there's a song on the record about the theater life. Sword Oratoria found a nice pairing with the recent Sabaton record, The Last Stand, as the Danmachi spin-off has plenty of battles, and Sabaton's songs are all about real-life wars and the like. And Puyo Puyo Tennis had to have been paired with Baby Metal's Metal Resistance, seeing as both deal with a blend of cuteness and hardcore factors. So if you've ever wondered how I write my articles, this gives you just a peek at what rolls around in my brain as I type away with music blaring. It also gives me the chance to highlight some great records that may or may not be given as much of a spotlight as it should. After all, there's tons of great music out there. You just have to know where to look. And speaking of music, why don't we get today's episode rolling? Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, Yes Asia, Amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. Let's start things off with a track from pop singer Eureka, one which served as the first opening theme to Little Witch Academia, which is currently streaming its first half of the first season on Netflix. Seriously, watch that show. We just posted a 5-star review on the Boston Bash Brigade page, which incidentally paired up with the Amanda Palmer album, Theater is Evil, because there's some sort of magical aspect between the two. Anyway, here is Eureka with a great song known as
shiny red.
album Chronicle, that was Fuji Fabric with All Right. Last December saw the release of their 9th album, Stand, and are currently prepping for a string of summer shows before diving into a lengthy tour at the beginning of next year. When it comes to iconic anime characters, I always tend to look at Lupin III as the king of them all. Since he jumped from Monkey Punch's original manga panels to the realm of animation back in 1971, the grandson of France's most famous thief has been stealing cash, treasures, and hearts all throughout the world. With his pals Jigen, Goemon, Fujiko, and even the bumbling foe Zenigata, the story of Lupin has just about always been quite the eye-catching adventure, filled with comedy, smarts, and some pretty cool visuals. Which is why I'm very excited about the newest series starring the iconic thief. Announced last week at Japan Expo in Paris, the 5th Lupin III series will be placing the gang this time around in France. While not a lot has been revealed quite yet, we can assume that we will finally get a chance to see Lupin III enter into the universe of his grandfather for a greater period of time. Perhaps we'll see some unique takes on the original works of Maurice LeBlanc, with some of Monkey Punch's trademark personality mixed in for what could be Lupin's ultimate adventure. Personally, I'm very excited about this new Lupin series. The last one, which you can either catch on Crunchyroll streaming or on Toonami Saturday nights, was one of the best adaptations of Monkey Punch's original work. It has the style, the attitude, the flair, and even the visual aesthetics of the original comic, while at the same time adapting the timeline to present day without taking away its classier roots. I am really hoping that they keep to this trend for season 5, as it showed that having Lupin stay in one country for its near entirety presented our favorite anti-hero with some new tricks up his sleeves. I'm also hoping that we'll get to see the newer characters, Rebecca Rosalini and Agent Nyx, thrown into the mix, as they added an extra dose of fun to Series 4. At any rate, I hope we can soon see Lupin III and his gang on some more fun and exciting adventures, especially now that the backdrop is in the realm of his more famous grandfather. Now, here's a bit of trivia for you all. Because of legal reasons, in France, Lupin III is known as Edgar, as the publisher who licensed the manga probably didn't have the okay from the estate of Maurice LeBlanc to use the original name. But this particular anime will be the first time that Lupin will have his true identity intact in France, so maybe we will see a collaboration between the two properties somewhere down the line of this new series. At any rate, here's hoping that it's just as good as the previous season. Seriously, you have to watch it. It's just mind-blowingly good. I think it's the best Lupin series to ever be made, even better than the Miyazaki Takahata-directed one of Series 1. My personal opinion, but if you watched both and compared the two, you'll understand completely why this 4th series was just outstanding. But Series 5, I am very much looking forward to, especially with me being of French ancestry. Hopefully it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. From San Francisco, this next band is more of a collaborative that first gained traction back in the 90s. They're called Labyrinth Lounge, who have finally made plans to release their first record on August 25th, entitled Porgy. This is the lead single off the EP, and it's called Trouble Won't Last.
Complain. Mine is $1,400 to my name. I feel like overeating, but I haven't the money to. I feel like no one understands my blues. This too shall pass. Share pass. This to share pass.
Mellow mood has got me feeling kinda sloppy. My day is choppy, and life then dropped me. Finding so many blues, so many hues of so many problems, ways out of them, no clues. And who put my cruise control in the hole of a soulless soul? Devilish goals to just hold brother down, and I won't be drowning in the pain, and no more restraining, no more refraining. I'm just a gaining my own and groaning. The gown is just loud and flourishing. That's how we coming through. We got inside, it's nourishing. Ambition on mission. The dream is what driven. The soul is what living, and nothing is given. Violence can consume you, doom you. Inside your mind, you can't find no room, you. It's your two feet to get you through these streets. Stand strong, not weak. Come on, come on.
This too shall pass, they say. This too shall pass. This too shall pass.
off of their Cover Me Shakespeare release. Be sure to check out their latest record, Metaltic Nocturne, which was released just a couple weeks back. No, that wasn't a spelling mistake in me reading it, that's how they spell the album. So the summer season of anime has just gotten started, and as of right now, there's no clear winner right out the gate. We got some interesting comedies with Quirks, with Aho Girl, and Clean Freak Aoyama-kun, to even some saucy lesbian stuff, and that's Zotrap. However, out of everything that's aired thus far as of this recording, I found myself pleasantly surprised with the premiere of yet another cooking-based series, Restaurant to Another World. Based on the light novel series, Restaurant to Another World places its focus on the Western restaurant, Nekoya. It's your average, well-received restaurant with normal business hours, but with a twist. On Saturdays, Nekoya finds itself playing host to alternate worlds with dragons, beasts, and other magical beings taking the role of the customer. It's run by a no-name chef. He's no name because he doesn't have a name in the show. Who inherits this place from his grandparents when they pass away. He apparently is very good at his job, as many creatures of different sizes and tiers find themselves revisiting his establishment. Later on in the first episode, a vagrant powerless demon named Alita finds herself sneaking into Nekoya and eating the leftovers of the day. Catching her in the act, the chef decides to give her a job as a waitress, giving her a taste of good fortune for the very first time. Judging from this first episode, Restaurant to Another World takes the route of the Ayashike, which is the genre of anime that's made to relax its viewers. Although it appears that the world this chef's restaurant finds itself in is ripe with adventure and danger, that's not what this anime is focused on. Instead, it's about these warriors' downtime, and the place they decide to lay their sword down for a bite just so happens to be this Nekoya restaurant. Because of this, I found myself comparing Restaurant to Another World to last year's Game of the Year pick Valhalla, which focused on a bar in a dystopian future that served patrons straight out of Blade Runner and The Fifth Element. I'm not exactly sure what else will be brought to the table, but I am very interested in seeing where they plan to take this tale of interdimensional cuisines in the long run. At the very least, it'll keep us viewers at bay for when Food Wars returns later this fall. You can catch Restaurant to Another World on Crunchyroll, and will be probably given the simul-dub treatment at Funimation. Now, if you're interested in seeing the world of this series expanded, you can also read the manga adaptation on Crunchyroll, which dives deeper into the lore of Restaurant to Another World. It's quite interesting, I recommend checking both versions out. Here's a band that calls themselves Takashi Umemiya and the Comrades, who recently added a new member to the group in the form of bassist Tom Peace. This is the title track from their 2014 record, and it's called Battle Scars.
They gotta try and stop them. Leaving us in bottle scars.
This year's Daybreak record, one of our favorite albums of this year. If you're in London on July 22nd, you can check out Divisionist at Hope and Anchor. Doors open at 8 p.m. and they'll be the first band to hit the stage. Once again, the video game realm has been invaded by Hollywood. This time, one of the more iconic series from our old 8-bit generation, Castlevania, has been given the cartoon route, which is a little bit of a rarity considering that these days, whenever someone wants to try to adapt a video game, they're going to turn into a movie. But fortunately, the guys over at Fred Raider, the same dudes who did Adventure Time and Fairly Odd Parents, have decided, let's make this a kick-ass cartoon. And I feel like they did a good job. But let's figure out the other opinions of my buddies here today. From the Ardcast, this is the DCD, Robert Workman, and David Glitnier.
Okay, isn't it an anime? It's not really a cartoon. It's an anime-style series,
It is an anime-style series, but it's an American cartoon. Americans made the show.
I know, yeah. I prefer to call it anime, because when you think cartoon, you mean like, you know, Trevor Belmont running against Wile E. Coyote, and that's not
right. I would pay to see that, honestly.
Yeah,
you see, that's the thing, because I've actually talked about this a lot in recent or previous podcast shows, is that whenever an American company makes a cartoon, it's always going to be, oh, ho, ho, it's going to be wacky fun or dirty humor. Like, there is never that sort of, let's keep it dark, let's keep the humor to the minimum, and let's just go for something that's really dramatic. It's always something like Bob's Burgers or Aqua Teen Hunger Force or Archer or something like that. Probably not since, and I'm stealing this from somebody else, I think from Destructoid, probably not since the 1997 Spawn cartoon on HBO have we seen someone actually do a more mature animated series that's not going for laughs, but rather going for something more hardcore.
Mm-hmm. Definitely goes for that darker style. And, you know, it's like they were really frequent in the 90s. You know, we had stuff like Batman the Animated Series. We had Spawn, right. Stuff like that. You know, and it's like, you know, back in the era of, say, like MTV's early animation, you know, like the Max and Aeon Flux, you know, stuff like that.
The Max.
And, yeah. And it really, lately, we have not seen that kind of animation style return, which is why I was really surprised when you had like Warren Ellis, who's done a lot of comic book work over years, along with Fred Rader and Adi Shankar, who did production work with the Dirty Laundry Punisher short film and the mature rated Power Rangers spinoff, I guess,
right.
We'll call it.
We'll call it like the short film tribute.
Yeah. And, you know, just seeing all these forces come together with the Castlevania franchise, because let's be honest, the Castlevania franchise has been dormant since Lords of Shadow 2, you know, because it's Konami, and Konami apparently likes to make sports games and or pachinko machines these days instead of actually worthwhile games, you know, so it's like when I heard there was a Castlevania series coming, I was shocked because it's like, you know, Konami usually brushes their franchises aside, unless, of course, it's Metal Gear Solid 3 Pachinko or something, you know. But
or Metal Gear, whatever the hell the zombie thing is they're doing.
Yeah, I know, but Survive.
Survival, yeah.
Let's pretend it doesn't exist, okay?
I was until you reminded me. Thanks for that.
Right.
but no, I mean, like, I was shocked, you know, and then I heard Netflix picked it up. And, you know, I started to get excited about it because, you know, it's like Adi Shankar, as you know, did some great work in the past with franchises. He doesn't really fuck them up. And, you know, like Warren Ellis, obviously, and Fred Rader, you know, a great studio that knows animation stuff. But usually this isn't quite, you know, normally in Fred Rader's wheelhouse.
Correct.
They prefer, you know, like you said, Fairly Odd Parents or Adventure Time. Kiddie
or even
stuff.
Bravest Warriors or a lot of the cartoon Hangover stuff. There's never been something from Fred Rader that goes for, like, the darker elements. I mean, granted, there have been episodes of Adventure Time that deals with very dark elements, but it never has done something that goes for, like, the brooding feeling.
Mm-hmm. And I really liked how they dug into that. Go ahead, David.
I mean, do you think that, like, it might be, like, from Adi Shankar's involvement with the project is, like, why it went, like, as dark as it did? Because, like, you know, after, like, watching the show, like, I was actually kind of surprised with, like, how, you know, like, how, I guess, like, kind of gory and violent and, you know, dark and bleak and everything that the whole tone kind of felt like throughout
the episode.
Well,
they did promise that. They did promise that this was going to be an R-rated cartoon. But when people think of R-rated cartoons, they think, oh, there's just going to be a lot of cursing and swearing, which there is in the show. But you've never seen anyone go this really violent route for seriousness. I mean, we've had violent cartoons that are funny, like Super Jail, but never something that goes a serious route. I mean, you see fucking babies get murdered in this cartoon.
Oh, dude, I'm watching, like, what was it, a mom and her daughter cross the street. Here comes, like, this evil bat creature and bashes the mom's head in. Then picks up the daughter, bashes her head in against the wall. I mean, they did not hold back on the, but, you know, I kind of expected that because Castlevania has taken kind of a mature rated turn over the past few years, like Lords of Shadow 2. That was probably their most mature Castlevania game to date with the themes that it took and everything like that. Right. Wasn't a perfect game. I wasn't crazy about the whole goddamn transforming into a rat. I really couldn't have done without that. But you get my idea. They wanted to keep that kind of theme going like Lords of Shadow 2 did. And I admire that decision, you know, because like making it sort of like a teen rating series, I think that would have taken away from like the theme and everything like that, but
right.
No, like you said, the carnage was great. It was like one point, like Trevor's whip is so much on point, he whips somebody's fucking eye out of their head,
right? Yeah.
Which was amazing.
Which I mean, by the way, like just like the fight scenes and just like the action in like, you know, in this very like short series, is like a certain, like it was actually very very impressive, and like, you know, especially like that, you know, that whole fight scene like in like a basically like an alleyway or whatever, and you know, to having like take out the guy's eye and like. With like I forget like what happened to the other guy, but like
he lost his finger.
He lost his finger. Yeah, with a whip, with a goddamn whip.
Yeah, but sorry, like the guy who like lost his eye, like you know, he ends up making kind of like a callback, like you know, in like a later episode as well. You kind of like feel bad for the guy, honestly, at that point.
So. Yeah, no, spoiler alert, he loses the other eye too.
Yeah, that's messed up.
It is. It's an eye for an eye.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's not exactly in this case. What the episode should be called.
But yeah. Yeah.
But we should make the point that this series is based off of the third Castlevania game. Dracula's Curse.
Yeah. One of the best ones, by the way.
Yeah, well, you see, I don't quite remember playing this one. I know I did, but I can't remember what it was like. So it was nice getting a bit of a refresher.
Yeah.
Basically, it was a game where you could choose multiple paths. You played as Trevor Belmont, but you could also choose other characters. Like, there was a pirate character that you could climb up walls. There was sort of like this hunter character that looked like a ghost. There was another character could, I believe, transform into a bat. Mm-hmm. So there were different characters that were involved. I don't know if I saw any of them in the show, but I mean, definitely one of those games that kind of went off the beaten path in terms of like how we, because especially after Simon's Quest, like Simon's Quest was set up in such a role-playing fashion. It kind of threw people off from what the first game was about, but then the third game kind of reverted back to what the first game was about. So
right.
It kind of came full circle.
But also like having four playable characters, and we had like three of those characters actually in the show. So like
okay, sorry, in the show, so yeah. They are okay.
Because you had you had like Trevor and right. What was it, Cypher? I think was like the name of the mm-hmm. Girl. Yeah. Like I forget exactly, but it's something like Cypher. And then
she is in it. Okay,
yes,
yeah, and obviously with like Alucard as well. Like having him show up.
The
in, like,
son the last, of Dracula.
Yeah, yeah. So exactly. He's in there too. So yeah, I mean, it really reflects more on that. And the thing is, like, you know, you can find a classic cartridge of the game, but I believe it's also on Wii U Virtual Console for like $5, which is a damn good deal if you ever want to like rediscover the game. But obviously, you know, some people prefer the NES style of play. So to each their own, of course. But it really ties greatly into the game's legacy. You know, like David said, along with introducing the characters, I really like the tone and. One thing that surprised me about this series is how much it kind of sympathized with Dracula's side.
Yes, and I wanted to bring that up.
I love this.
I feel like it really gives much more depth into the characters than the original video game could have. Like, you understand why Dracula wants to slaughter all of humanity. I would fucking do the same thing, too, if, like, the church and the people were like, oh, your wife's a witch, we just burnt her.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? I would fucking slaughter everyone!
Exactly. You know, in the games, he's just a dickhead that throws fireballs.
Yes.
But here you actually have purpose. You know, he doesn't go, what is it? He's not, like, a cocky son of a bitch. Here, he's actually, like, he shows sympathy to the old woman. He's like, get out of here.
Yeah,
I'm going to kill everyone.
Yeah, he's kind of like a tragic figure, honestly, and that's kind of like what makes the first episode, I feel like, so strong, is like the fact that it does focus so much on Dracula's backstory and like his motivations, I guess, for like becoming basically the like almost kind of like a homicidal psychopath in a lot of ways. throughout, because like he doesn't really make much of an appearance like after that first episode. That's a shame, honestly, because like he was such a strong figure, and that's really what made that pilot episode, I feel like, so good. And like the rest of the episodes are good on their own merit, but like I would have loved to see, I guess, more of Dracula, and I guess like just more of the show in general. That kind of gets into another underlying, like, I don't know, just like one minor issue, I'd say, like with the series, is that fact that I feel like there could have been more episodes to kind of flesh things out. But for what we were given, I think it was a good taste of what's to come for second season.
Exactly.
The way it was originally set up, I believe, was it was supposed to be like a movie, but then they like sort of plotted the course in terms of making more like a series. Now, I've already gotten word that Netflix really likes how the series ended up, and as a result, we're going to get a second season. And it's going to be twice as long. It's going to be 8 episodes instead of the 4. So that's good news. You know, we will see more extensive telling of Dracula's side of things, of Trevor, Alucard. We're going to see a lot more of that. I think this is just sort of like a launching point. I think this is a launching point of the series to get us interested in the characters and everything like that. And I think that's a good point. You know, like if we'd gotten a 13-episode series and that's it, it would have been a great story. But I think by doing this, by structuring it out a little bit more, we get more sides of the story and we get it fleshed out more. Exactly. And I think it really pays off for it. So short, yeah, but sweet, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the way it is.
At least we know that there's going to be more to it. Like you said, it was originally going to be a movie, and I feel like that they couldn't really accomplish what this show would be able to do in just like a 90-minute film. Like, 90 minutes alone were those four episodes, which is basically setting us up for that ultimate battle between Trevor, Alucard, the girl, I can't seem to remember the name, and Dracula. And I feel like that we're going to actually see a lot more development into all three of these characters as the series progresses into season two.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it's just the way, like I said, the way that everybody's fleshed out. Dracula's just not being a dick for no reason. You know, Trevor's flawed. Hell, when we first meet him, he gets his ass kicked.
Yeah,
that was actually kind of awesome, because like, how many action movies where we're introduced to the main hero or whatever, and he's just, you can't stop me, whap whap whap, I win. This guy,
right? He gets kicked in the fight, but he does have a lot of scars afterwards.
Oh yeah.
He gets like kicked in the junk like twice in this bar fight, you know. Like, I kind of feel bad for him after that, but like, you know, at the same time, you're kind of like wondering, like, well, what happened to this guy? Because like, clearly he has like a bit of like a history, like obviously being part of like the Belmont family and all that, and like that's always, you know, that's kind of like played up very well as far as like what like the townspeople think of like the Belmont clan. But obviously he's not really making like an effort to like hide it or anything. But at the same time, he's just kind of like, He's pissed that like people just have this like had this cognition, I guess, of his family, but like he just doesn't want to hide that fact either. So it's really interesting character, and like really kind of like a twist, I guess, as far as like being like an anti-hero too, because you don't really get the sense of him being an anti-hero in the NES game for sure.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact growing in sort of a secondary villain character with the Bishop.
Oh, yeah,
and this is probably something you guys didn't know. Do you know who voiced the Bishop?
That was Matt Frewer, aka Max Headroom.
Max Headroom. Yes. He's probably like the most recognizable name in the cast. Although Graham McTavish does a great Dracula, Richard Armitage is great as Trevor Belmont. You know, it really is a great voice cast, even though it's a minor one. But yeah, I found it kind of mind blowing that you can't really recognize that voice. It's kind of cool how he did that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they're like great performances, like all around. Honestly, like especially with like Dracula, and also with like Trevor Belmont, honestly, and you know, even like just like, you know, the little kind of comments he was kind of make like here and there, just kind of showing that, I mean, like, he cares, but he doesn't want to show that he cares so much, you know.
He literally just says, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know, and even like the comment, like the one comment that had me like laughing out loud, honestly, it's kind of amazing that you can have like a show like this that is so dark and bleak and just like, you know, is like really devoid of like any hope, really, in a lot of ways, because like it's all about like basically humanity pretty much like coming in like, you know, on their last death knell in a lot of ways, is with, you know, the vengeance of Dracula coming down on them. But right. Having Trevor there like to make comments like your floating Jesus guy or whatever, like from like Alucard when Alucard first shows up, that was just absolutely hilarious.
No, my favorite line from Alucard is like, Don't kick me into testicles. This isn't a bar fight.
Yes, yeah, that was so good. It's like nice little callbacks like that. This, you know, again, despite how short the series is, it was really cool. Like, you know, with the guy who loses his eye, and you know, right there, like with kicking in the junk.
Oh, dude, the Cyclops fight was actually when he did the whole thing with the knife and the whip. You know, that was actually very impressive. It really was. And then he moved to, like, what was it? Those guys, or what was the name of them? The group that the Sypho was with?
The speakers.
The speaker, yeah. He had him down there. He's like, I swear I saw it move.
Yeah. Really, really good, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, the action in this series is brief and everything like that, but just the idea.
It builds up to it.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's like, I think having more of a story that fleshes things out is sometimes more important than overloading it with over-the-top action sequences. And another example I can tie into this is Spider-Man Homecoming. This is a movie that's not really loaded over the top with action sequences. It does have some good ones, like on the Washington Monument and on a plane, but it's really more about establishing the story of the character. In this case, it's Peter Parker and the Vulture and all that. I mean, I know we're going off topic a little bit here. I'm just saying they can really relate. You know, this, instead of like going balls to wall with action and having explosions happening every 5 seconds, we're getting something that really unfolds and tells a damn good story. And I think that's important for a series like this. As brief as it is, we get a nice setup for season two. I'm excited for season two, and that's where the series succeeded.
Exactly. And I think they announced season two like an hour after they launched the show, so they must have seen like instant success when the show launched. And most of the credit, I believe, goes to like Fred Raider Studios and the other studio that did it, Powerhouse Animation Studios. Konami, they only get like a bit of sliver of credit just by saying, okay, go ahead and do this. We don't care.
Yeah, but at least they were gracious enough to do that. I mean, it's Konami.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. But, you know, I'll give credit where credit is due. Adi Shankar and his team. Warren Ellis did a damn good job with the show's writing, I think.
You know what it reminded me of was his writing style that he brought to the Hellblazer series many years back.
Mm. I'm just saying, I like the cornball lines. There's a couple of them in there. You know, because that Symphony of the Night was known all about that. I mean, come on, just ask anybody. Be like, you know, what is a man? No, right. Literal pile of secrets.
Sure. Yeah. It's it was definitely like I would say just kind of like overall like the show felt very like, you know, tight and concise, as you know, again, like just with the 4-episode run and everything. I'm just very hesitant with calling this a season. Really, this kind of feels like more of like a, I don't know, preliminary season. Like I would call this like a season zero.
It does feel like a prologue.
It does.
Yeah, because like it does kind of leave it at like a almost kind of like a cliffhanger in a lot of ways. Like where, like, you know, now you have like these three characters together, and like now they have to kind of like, you know, face against Dracula or whatever. And like that's kind of like the whole point of the show, as well as like, you know, with the games and everything. So I don't know, like, if it is going to be like, you know, more episodes, which I surely hope that is true, honestly, for like season two. I would love to kind of see that be like, I guess, like a true season with like some actual meat on its bones, and really kind of like use this season as like a stepping stone, like into something truly great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can understand that, you know.
We just got a taste.
Yeah, yes, we did. Exactly. But we got a very good taste, mm-hmm. and something to get us excited for when the fall season comes around.
For sure.
For me personally, I feel like that this could be a great stepping stone for more mature animated series to be made.
I just suggested, I did an article over my comicbook.com/gaming site where I suggested some franchises that this team could work on. Mm-hmm. And I came up with several. I came up with Darkstalkers.
Okay.
I came up... Or Darksiders, too.
Sorry. Yes.
Darksiders more than Darkstalkers, but that's a good one, too. Let's grow everything up. Gunstar Heroes. Mm-hmm. God of War. Metroid. I mean, there are a number of great franchises. I don't know if Nintendo would sign up for a mature Metroid series, but I mean, it's done anime projects before. It did that that Star Fox one a few years back. Right. So, you know, there's definitely the potential to really do a kick-ass anime with, like, Metroid or something like that. And mm-hmm. Darksiders, I mean, with Darksiders 3 coming next year, it just makes sense to have something in that legacy. And we know Adi Shankar likes doing this stuff because he signed on to do the Assassin's Creed. That's going to be an animated series as well.
Which I feel like is going to be much, way more superior than the movie that came out last year.
Oh, I believe, yeah.
I feel like, because here's the thing. I feel like when it comes to adapting, like, comic books and video games, it should go from its original property to doing a cartoon first before diving into the live action realm. Don't get me wrong, I know it sounds awesome to see a lot of your favorite video games and comic books being turned into live action movies, but personally, I feel like you can get the real personality of the original properties if you did them as cartoons first.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not really a fan of the live-action Assassin's Creed. I think they did the animus in a very cornball way. The story really wasn't as fulfilling as I thought it'd be. And that ending, like, you're telling me that this guy's speaking in front of a crowd and everything like that, nobody sees an assassin slipping in to kill him? Really? And then nobody tries to capture the assassin? Really? Oh, okay. Assassination is simple with Michael Fassbender. So, yeah, I really hope the animated series just really captures the tone of the games more. And knowing Adi Shankar, knowing what he's done with Castlevania and his other projects, I have full faith that it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and like personally, like I would love to see to see like a Metroid series done in the same style too, Robert. And also like with what you mentioned there with like Darksiders, I think like a Darksiders series could certainly work, but only if you really get Joe Madureira.
Joe Mads.
Joe Mads. So like if you get him like on board, like, you know, as you know, mainly for like the, you know, creative control and just kind of making sure that kind of get like the art style like down as well, because like the art style and from like his Darksiders times and everything was like really, really well done. So like it'd be kinda cool to see that in an animated sense.
And I am kind of interested how Darksiders 3 will fare without Joe Mad, which is kind of weird, you know, but I'm still excited for it. You know, it's a good continuation of the series. I want to see what the Vigil Games team, or now I believe Gunfire Games, I don't know the exact new name of the studio, but they learned a lot from Joe, so hopefully we'll see that Dark Joe come back. But yeah, I agree with you. Darksiders series should not be done without Joe Mad.
Maybe we can get like a Battle Chaser series, you know. So.
How about this? I'm actually holding the first volume in my hand right now. Imagine if they were to do an animated series based on Southern Bastards.
I would love that.
That would be a lot of fun.
Honestly, I think that would work a lot better, honestly, as like a live action, like have it like an HBO series or something. I have thought about this, honestly. And like it's literally making Friday Night Lights like as like a deep, darkly, like unsettled kind of like, you know, kind of show, basically. So like instead of like the was it Big Eyes, like Full Hearts Can't Lose or something like that, like it said, it's just downtrodden and just like, you know, again, kind of has that very like I guess kind of like hopeless kind of feel to it, as like this, you know, as this high school coach just kind of like has a grip on like the town. Like, again, not to divert from the topic and everything, but like if you bring up Southern Bastards, I think it would, you know, it would have to be like a live action HBO show, honestly.
You see, I would kind of disagree because I feel like more animated series based on mature comics should be done. Because that's how I felt after I watched the first few episodes of Preacher. I've walked away from that going, that should have been a cartoon. This should have been a better animated series.
Because there's more of like a supernatural tone in that. So like I feel like that lends itself better to being animated, like where you can kind of get away with more stuff like that and not be like super cheesy with it. At least with like Southern Bastards, it's more grounded in like reality and everything. So like I could see that, like, you know, being something along the lines of, I don't know, kind of like a Game of Thrones, Walking Dead-ish sort of like tone. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Totally.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I can't watch Preacher either. I mean, some decent performances, but I don't know. I got thrown off a while ago.
Me too. I stopped after episode 3. Like, I just couldn't watch anymore.
Okay, so I'm not the only one. Good, good, good. For a moment there, I thought I was like the only guy who stopped watching that show.
No. You're far from alone there.
All right. Robert, David, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. Everybody should be watching this Castlevania cartoon. Prepare themselves for hopefully season 2 or sometime early next year. It's probably the best thing that happened to the Castlevania franchise since, you know, I can't
Lords of Shadow.
Since the first Lords of Shadow. Let's forget about Lords of Shadow 2.
Sure.
Why sure.
So, Robert, David, let our listeners know where they can check your stuff out.
Sure. Yeah, so you can find like the Arcast, which is short for another podcast, on retrozap.com. So like, it's basically kind of like a family of like podcasts there that's you know, full of like other podcasts. Like a lot of them are very Star Wars related. But yeah, for like Arcast, you know, we cover like retro games, and we also kind of like cover like the gaming industry as a whole, but kind of give it like an old school bend, basically, since Robert and I kind of have more of like a retro gaming background, basically. So yeah. So yeah, you know, you can find us on retrozap.com. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play Music. So yeah.
And if you want to follow David on Twitter, it's twitter.com/theguiltyman. You want to follow me on Twitter, it's twitter.com/thedcd. You can also find my work at comicbook.com/gaming, where we cover everything in the comic book spectrum as well as gaming in general. And yeah, we do our podcast every week and all that stuff, and it's always a lot of fun. We get special guests. We had Evan on a couple times, we're going to get a whole bunch of new guests on our show as well and drive them crazy, just like we drive each other. But yes, indeed, I think it's appropriate to end this little segment with a miserable little pile of secrets. But enough talk. Have at you. No, really, watch the show. It's fun.
It is, truly.
They got to add that line in next time.
Please. You know what would be great? You know, if the next series threw in characters from Castlevania Bloodlines, I'd love to see that.
See some crossover.
Those are some great characters as well. So,
I mean, who knows? Probably once Dracula's Curse's story is over, they could be like, hey, let's adapt all the other games.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean,
I can see that being next.
Maybe not Judgment, because that sucked.
Yeah.
There's not much to go on with that anyway.
Castlevania 64, it'll look like shit. And,
yeah. We'll do it like in that style. It'll be like Machinima, basically.
Righto.
Guys, thank you once again. And now, for a classic from X-Japan, whose mastermind Yoshiki seems to be healing quite well after his neck surgery, be sure to also check out their film, We Are X, which is now streaming on Hulu. From Jealousy, this is Miscast.
血と涙で光る翼で今全部全部を切っ去って取れた鳥が空を睨んでる。低空飛行する奴らが笑おうと海の果てが見たい。心を無にして向かい風に乗り助走をつけて
Syndromes with Fly High off of their Lemon album. The song served as one of the opening themes to season 2 of Haikyuu, an anime about volleyball that's far better than a show about volleyball should be. Incidentally, it was announced that Sentai Filmworks will be dubbing Haikyuu very soon, so yay for that! Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter at KingBabyDuckESH, on the J-pop, anime, and video games amino pages at KingBabyDuckESH, on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/omnistryinc.
Like us on Facebook.com/Boston Bash Brigade and on Facebook.com/Land of Esh. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smashed Rook, and Nerd Crave. Promotional consideration for this week's tracks from Labyrinth Lounge and Divisionist, made by Shameless Promotion PR, and the music from Takashi Umemiya and the Comrades was made possible by Tom Molesky. Thanks again for sending down these wonderful artists to spin on our show. This final song goes out to all the muggles and wizards out there celebrating 20 years of the Harry Potter franchise. I know, 20 years of Harry Potter. How time flies by. Here are the most illest and magical rappers on the planet, the Wizards, with that popular track from their Purple Magic album. This is Wizards Never Die. And until next time, this is your King Baby Doc Evan Borgo reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
Motherfucking Wizards never die.
Yeah, you know who we are. Hey, we back. Motherfucker, 2008.
Motherfucking Wizards never die.
Puffin' on that wizard beat all day, all night. Stay hot, that's why wizards ain't gon' die.
Just try and step up to this wizard. Oh, you ain't heard? Don't fuck with this wizard. I'm a force to be reckoned with. Motherfucker, bow down, you should second this.
I'm bulletproof.
Step up to me, take aim and cock it. Pull the trigger, now watch, I just smile and block it. What the fuck can you do to kill me? Ha! I got my spells to heal me.
Go ahead, roll up with your gats a blast. Then I blast back and kill while the joint's still passing.
I'm from the streets, bitch, you know where I've been. Always sipping potion with that juice and gin. I'm out, motherfucker, it's time to fly. Because
you know motherfucking wizards never die.
We don't die, we don't die.
Dragon riding, steel maiden banging. This motherfucking wizard got in the crack slanging.
Yeah.
I'm in the kitchen all day long, stirring them cauldrons to a minstrel song.
What?
I serve goblins, make fiends out of orcs. Who the fuck said spell casting was for dorks?
I get treasure.
Stacking gold coins, rupee in my ring. This magic game is a beautiful thing, but it's tough.
It's like
you gotta earn your keep. That's why I'm rolling with my guild 4 deep. You can try and creep to this wizard thug, but you're gonna catch a motherfucking lightning slug. Don't make this wizard mad, don't make this wizard pissed. I could kill a hill giant with a flick of my wrist. Go ahead, dude, give it a try, motherfucker. Wizards can't die.
Profound surprise, what's with your eyes? You're so hypnotized. Said to me, I'll make you cry. We wizards never die. Ooh, ha, ooh, hey, that's what the maiden be screaming when they get with me.
Never die.
You wanna get real, you gotta act real. And that's a fact, Neil Patrick Harris. Cats embarrassed when I battle them, because I rattle the rhyme skills with my talisman. I'm holding this track down like Mike Tyson, hitting the skins with Robin Givens. I'm about to begin to flex on this mic here. I'm rocking tight gear, flashing my white beard. That's right here. Motherfucking elves, you all know me. I never won a Grammy, I won't win a Tony. But those who know me know I'm dealing the realness, so they can feel this like a dope set of real tits. When I'm hitting skins, I rock and I lean with it. So deep it's a spinal tap like Michael McKean's in it. I got a spell book by my side.
Motherfucking wizards never
die. We don't die, we don't die, we don't die, we don't die. We stay high because
motherfucking wizards never die.
We don't die, we don't die, we don't die, we don't die. We stay high because
motherfucking wizards never die.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.